CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com. Monday morning. It's almost the end of March. We've got Easter coming up in a little while.
Yay, Easter bunny time.
Chocolate. Jesus. I'm not a big chocolate person, but I ate some over the weekend, and now I got to go to gym. I just feel like that's not a good place to
start. Is that natural? You look good.
No, dude. I haven't been to gym for 2 weeks now because I wasn't feeling well a week ago, and then I just didn't have a chance. Last week was chaos.
Right.
You know, 3-day week, and then everything gets squeezed into the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I was just exhausted. Friday night, I got home, and I just went to bed at like 9 o'clock on a Friday.
It's okay.
I don't feel bad. I loved it. I'm only too happy, but it shows you like there was a lot squeezed in there. All right. So, you wanted to ask Leanne something. I think it had to do with ChatGPT or something.
Oh, I forgot.
You ready? Oh God. Now you've upset everybody because they were waiting for something there.
So I wanted to find out from Leanne because she's using it and she's using it for writing. Okay. I want to know when it comes to creative writing. What do you think about using it for creative writing when it comes to scripts? Because I write scripts, right?
Mm-hmm.
TV and movie scripts. Do you think that is a cheat, unlike Googling information? Is it cheating? Because it will take away a lot of hard work in the script writing process.
Mm.
And then all that's left for me is to go back and add little Trevor
creative bits from you.
You know, writing a novel, I could say, ChatGPT, write me a novel about my love affair with Leanne and the complex she lived in with her husband and drug addict friends.
Yeah.
God, that would be fun. So, what a great movie that would be.
I know exactly how you're thinking. And the first time I used it, that was the guilt that plagued me. But then I realized it was shaving off so much time that I had more time to add the Leanne-ness. I had more time to add the creativity and make it my own. I also, from a technical point of view, didn't have to. So if I was writing for social media, perhaps I didn't have to worry about, what hashtags were included or how long the script was. I could then go back and have more time. So, I mean, are you, and again, I compare it to this. Would you feel guilty if you Googled something and got the answer and rather than going to the library and searching through the catalogs and the books?
No.
We need to make it a tool that makes us better. Even if it churns out a letter saying, please, can I have a raise? We learn from that letter because we're not just going to send it. We're going to read it. And our brains will now know how to write a letter for that in future. That's not a great learning tool, and I don't know.
I love using it I haven't used it a lot because it may be more helpful to both of you than it is to me at this point because we really don't know what we're going to do on the show. Honest to God, this show happens.
No, we never have.
This is like a live chat GPT. Yeah. And I did try the other day. I said, like, come up with a conversation between me and I think it was Lebang, who does the show with me on a Tuesday. And it came up with this boring-ass conversation.
Oh.
It was like, hey, Gareth, it's great to see you. Yes.
But then
it's
your good prompts to see were you wrong. Too.
No. Well, I know. I haven't I'm the unrefined process here. Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't see how that thing is going to catch up anytime soon to that. But look at this. I asked it now while we were sitting here. I'm like, tell me what happens in chapter 8 of Tolstoy's War and Peace. Okay. Which is a book fat, which you don't want to read.
Uh-huh.
It's a hard read. It's about Russian politics. And it gives me a breakdown, but like a paragraph or three, right? It goes in chapter 8 of Tolstoy's War and Peace, titled The Battle of Borodino, the long-awaited battle between the Russian and French armies finally takes place. But dude, isn't this more helpful than actually reading it?
It is.
And then you want to talk about the book. I mean, I watched a movie the other night and I knew it had to do with history. So I looked up the book that the movie was based on ChatGPT and said, give me a summary. And there was like an executive précis
of
what the actual history of the book and the events were. And then I could get on with the movie without having to do mountains of reading and research that I would have done before.
We have to just see it as a tool that's moving us forward. I mean, I look at this, something simple and it's – again, it's the guilt in the beginning. I was writing for a nursery, like a garden nursery.
Oh, yeah.
A social media post about raspberry. Oh,
you have all the sexy assignments, oh, yeah, don't you?
Raspberry jam.
Well, listen how this makes this sexy.
Yeah.
About raspberry fruit bushes that they were selling.
Oh. Ooh.
And I thought, let me just try something quick, because I've done long form things like write me a proposal for a summer campaign for this. I just said, can you, because you, one of the things about the prompting, and we can maybe get to prompting, is you need to ask it if it can.
Oh, right.
Yeah. There are a whole lot of tips. So I said, can you create a sentence describing raspberry fruit bushes in a creative way? It came back. The rubies of the garden, raspberry fruit bushes glisten with their luscious crimson jewels, enticing all who pass by to pluck their succulent treasures.
Wow.
I mean, that is amazing. Okay.
Not bad.
Then, do I copy and paste that?
Yeah.
No, I take elements from it. I love the words, the rubies of the garden. I loved
succulent.
Enticing. Yeah.
You That's like the word moist for me.
Have I now cheated? or am I going to, every time I write about about raspberries in future, those words are going to come to my mind. Crimson jewels.
Well,
I've learned something.
Okay, so I asked it something interesting. I said, what temperature should my balls be at?
But that's a Google question, Gareth.
But it's a great question. Don't you want to know?
No.
You don't want to know what temperature your balls
should. Because what if I'm in inclement weather and I can't control that?
So the normal temperature for the testicles is around 34 to 35 degrees.
What?
But that's a Google thing.
They're located outside the body but come on, what am I going to talk to ChatGPT? I'm not writing an assignment like you. I have to talk to it about something.
Is it free?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's free.
Do you have to download something?
No.
It's just a website.
It's like going to Google.
Where do you find it?
Just go OpenAI. I'll give you the address.
Or just search ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Ha!
You can do it now.
ChatOpenAI.com. Yeah, you can don't do ask it any.
No, I want to do it in the privacy of my masturbatorium.
What are you going to ask it? I want to know what the first question is. What is the first question Trevor Goombie's going to ask ChatGPT?
Okay, here's another example. Is there a better way to write this Google My Business description, I said. And I pasted in stuff about this nursery. It came back and said, overall, your description is good. However, you could consider these things. Use more engaging language. You know, bring in a bit more personality. Use some bullet points to make it easier to read and digest. Focus on the benefits. What are your unique selling points? That's all so helpful and makes me learn.
Shit. All right. You've got me confused.
Huh.
I was pretty sure I wouldn't be using this, but I think I'm going to be using it all the time. And it takes some of the drudgery away. Like you spoke about writing a script. Like there's so much stuff there, you know, come up with a dialogue for, and then you take it and you make it funny or you make it, cause that's your thing. That's the Trevor stuff that you were talking about. I think that's awesome. Save you time, dude.
Definitely.
I love the idea of anything that makes things more efficient. Jason Stiles says the English teacher won't have a job thanks to ChatGPT. That's not true.
It's not true.
Because people are still going to have to learn how to ask. What Leanne said, the right questions.
Comprehension, yes.
That's a proper skill to have to ask the right questions or something. Otherwise, you get the wrong answers.
There will be courses that you pay for where you learn how to prompt Open Chat or Open AI or ChatGPT. All these AI tools, they're going to be courses on how to use them and what prompts to use.
So Cliff Centralist says masturbatorium.
Yeah.
You want to clarify what that is?
Oh.
Ow.
Ow.
That is a one door room in which every single surface is laminated. For easy wiping.
Oh, no.
It can house, it's a four-man room, but it can be enjoyed alone. It's not for polite guests.
Yeah.
That's what a masturbatorium is. I've got one at the back of my house.
Is it like a sex dungeon?
Well, there's no one tied up in there physically.
Not right now.
Physically. It's all virtual.
It's all very virtual. So Tulani wants to give me some shit here about, will Gareth admit about his story about a friend who had ChatGPT write his thesis and passed? I don't think I ever said I had a friend who wrote his thesis in
not
past.
A friend. You mentioned that I you'd had read about it.
No, I'd heard about it from a YouTube video where someone was talking about ChatGPT. Yes. So, my friend.
No.
But you can crack these things. Like, I know people who have been able to fool the systems that are there to fish out the plagiarism.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, if I went and copied that and pasted that sentence about raspberries, there are tools that you can reverse Google image search and it'll bring up a copyright.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is
okay. This is what I wanted to ask about ChatGPT.
Yes, that one.
This thing. In the wrong hands, because it's a powerful tool. In the wrong hands, it could be used for evil doing. Like, I didn't know how to launder money at the beginning of this conversation.
You could ask it.
How do I successfully launder money in South Africa?
There, your prompt would be a bit different.
Can I?
No.
Can you?
Show respect to the tool and you say, can you? Or help me write a plan. Put together a plan. In fact, there's an example
help
in
me,
use already.
Help me put together a plan.
There's an example in use already where, and I don't have the facts in front of me, so I'm just going to use poetic license. But they asked ChatGPT to use, I think it was $1,000 to make me $100,000, and it came up with a full plan.
Wow!
It showed you how you can go to something like Fiverr.com. Fiverr.com, which is employing writers like me as freelancers, to put together a copy for you. It then puts together a marketing plan. It brings out this full-on presentation that you can take to get Jeez. Funding. And it actually made this person 100,000 rand.
Damn.
Or dollars. So I have a feeling, you're not far from the truth.
I have a feeling Trevor's masturbatorium is going to become his ChatGPT place.
It is.
That sounds amazing. All right. So here's a nice comment from Carl. He says, I'm a 37-year-old man, but I saw Trevor in a Prego roll queue at Ellis Park a few months ago.
I remember that.
I felt like a teenage girl meeting Justin Bieber.
I remember that. I was just watching the rugby. What a great day.
That's very nice. Are you sure you don't need ChatGPT to break that one down, Trev? I'm not sure which thing exactly Cliff Centralist is talking about here. Trevor has left little Goombies on every surface of his masturbatorium.
Congo Chris.
All right. Very good. So a couple of other things, like Leanne has a thing or two to tell us this morning. One of them is apparent exposure to other people's sweat can help reduce social anxiety.
Oh.
I know, it sounds so gross.
It is gross. We were talking about people spitting in your ear earlier.
Yeah. But you know the whole thing about these chemicals being in sweat, right?
No.
Well, it's a chemical signal that we can
DNA.
Send to each other. Not DNA so much, but more like hormonal. Like if you go and work out now, since you're appropriately dressed.
Thank you.
If there's something in your sweat or your body odor that attracts me to you, and believe me, it can.
Pheromones.
We're not just thinking about the stink of sweat. There's just something in your body odor that it would attract me, or there's something that doesn't. That can very much have to do with a sense that a woman have on whether or not it's going to be good to breed with this person. Like, will the pregnancy survive?
You've heard about pheromones. I mean, like, there's some people who, when they sweat, they don't smell horrible. And there's some people to other people. But there's some people who, when they sweat, they stink. And it all depends on, like, what the pheromones, the signals, the message signals in that smell are telling you. We were talking on Friday, I think it was, about how the sense of smell is one of our most unbelievably complex senses. I mean, all of them are complicated.
It can smell millions.
Yeah. It's why, for example, certain things are extremely dangerous, and we can smell tiny, tiny concentrations of them. Dead things, for example, we can pick up the smell of death. You know, if something's dead in the roof or the floor or whatever, we smell it immediately, even if it's only one or two parts per million. But
lime helps.
Yeah. Just saying, if you needed to hide a body.
To hide the stench of death.
Industrial Strength Live, you can get it at Bilbo.
Stop. We don't want to be helping people to hide bodies. No? There's enough shit going on.
The secret is.
Okay, let's go.
The secret
let's
is.
Let's go there.
You, whatever, whoever you bury, bury a pet above them.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah.
That is truly.
Oh, yes.
That is truly clever.
Because the dog, the sensor dogs will sniff out the spot. Start digging, and then the investigators,
mongoose.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
They're never going to look underneath that.
No.
That's so clever.
Very, very clever.
Shit. You see, we're learning.
You've been watching true crime with your wife.
You didn't get it from ChatGPT, you lying bastard.
Why do ladies love watching that so much?
I can tell you why.
It's scary as fuck.
Because they're...
Husbands who kill. I'm in bed with you.
Because they're learning.
Yeah.
They're learning on how to avoid situations like that happening to them.
Avoid. Oh.
Yes.
Which, that's what she says. But there's some of them who are watching to get ideas.
Tips.
Yeah. The ones that aren't as cute as bunnies are plotting something bigger.
Do you also, you don't watch those shows? I hate those shows. I don't want to see real true crime
stuff. I'm forced
to
watch.
Life is.
My wife and I are very different.
Do you guys have a bedroom TV situation?
Yeah.
Oh, you see.
Yeah. And a camera and everything.
Oh, right.
For
mirror on the ceiling.
No, it's for meetings.
Waterbed.
For meetings. That's
a heart shaped waterbed.
Yeah. That's living on the edge. Fear.
Yeah.
God. Your bedroom and masturbatorium sound like the same place. All right. Always plant an endangered tree over the body you're burying. Then it's illegal to dig it up. That's another good idea.
Very clever.
That's very smart. I like Congo Chris.
Yes. He's full of good ideas. Do you have like a list of people who you could call if you needed to hide a body? It would be a very short list, but are there friends that you care about you that much that they would come to your aid to hide a body?
No.
You brought up the body hiding thing, so I'm asking. There's no one.
No.
No one?
No.
I have a few
I've got a good group of friends now.
Yeah.
People who are above bad things.
Like, you have to know 100% that person's not going to turn on you.
Exactly.
That's why I'm saying you get to a very, very small number of people, if at all. He says, no, there isn't.
I've got two.
You got two, huh? Mm. Would one of them be a brother? One of them be your brother?
Hot water bottle and a bottle of bubble.
Would one of them be your brother?
Yes.
Okay.
And the other is a lawyer.
Oh, well.
So I thought that might be quite clever.
That's interesting.
Talking about client privilege.
Yeah, I got two or three friends I could call on in that case. But I'm not planning anything, just to be clear.
No, it's if something happens.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a trust thing from my end, but I don't think,
you think anybody you're on your
else
own.
Would do something illegal with me. They would do things maybe illegally on their own and not tell me, but doing something illegal with me, they wouldn't.
Then you need to watch more true crime because it sounds like you're going to save your ass by yourself.
No. I feel like that's almost tempting fate. You watch those shows. It makes you think that stuff. I think the real world is hard enough. You know, it's like these people who have, like, they're paranoid about their house being broken into or whatever. And that's happened to you. I mean, you had that home invasion, which is, no, I understand it. But like, if you're thinking about it all the time, it's making you extremely unhappy. And I think that you can't live in blissful ignorance, right? But you don't want to also bring yourself into constant contact with crime and murders and things, even if it's TV shows. I don't want to have that in my reality.
No, just don't follow useful brunching on Twitter.
Oh, God, yeah. No, don't do that.
It's true.
Hey, let's just put this call on. Hang on. Hey, what's up? Hello.
Morning, Karat. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. What's happening?
I know you're good. I have a problem.
Yeah?
Why did you delete those old Trevor Kumbi shows?
We didn't delete any. They're still there on cliffcentral.com.
No, it says the shows have been archived, all of them.
Just send us an email. We'll sort it out. I promise you, they're still there.
Wow, okay. That's awesome. I have a serious question, by the way.
Okay, go.
Except that. Okay, how do I respond to people, because I have these people on my WhatsApp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I see their statuses, most of them, not most of them, but I can say half of them, always posting things like, oh, I'm having such a bad day. Oh, my life is so hard. Always complaining. How do you respond to those things?
How would you respond,
Gumi? Because they are not talking to you. They are just posting, they're putting it out there. I don't know if you should respond.
I think they're probably attention seeking. But what would you do, Gumi?
Ignore.
Just ignore them.
Yes, I would ignore that.
Because they're like crying. They're crying for help, so you don't need to be involved.
Yeah, bro. They're not talking to you. I would check on them if you care about them, but if you don't care about somebody, you can't extend an olive branch to somebody that you're not willing to save. So if you really don't care for that person, don't give them false hope, because you will drop them when things get even worse. But if it is somebody you care about, just reach out to them and say, would you like to talk? You know, talk them off the ledge if that's what needs to be. But I ignore that stuff. I've got enough problems.
Yeah. What would you say? What would you say, Leanne? It's a good question, because I've seen these things on people's WhatsApp statuses too. And you see there's people who they'll post something on any social medium thing. And it's like, oh,
hello, darkness, my old friend.
I'm so ready to give up or whatever. And
here we go again.
Like, you're tempted to get involved, but maybe that's not the right thing to do.
I think when it's a WhatsApp status in particular, how often do people update those? Is it a thing that people...
I don't
people,
even know what mine is.
I think I've got a sunshine or a see no evil monkey or something. I don't know. But no, if it's a permanent message they've put out there or semi-permanent message, then
mine
I'm really not
urgent
interested.
Calls only. That's mine.
It's very, very rude, yeah. Gareth.
Well, I mean, do you...
This story, WhatsApp stories, not the status.
Oh, WhatsApp stories.
Okay. Yeah, I don't even look at those. I don't think I've ever seen anyone's WhatsApp story.
But yeah, I reached
out to one of them.
If it's someone that you know and it's a cry for help, then yeah. But otherwise,
ugh. Sorry, you say you reached out to one of them and?
And they just told me, I'm not sure if I'm ready to talk about it.
Well, there you go. You just wasted your data, bro.
Yeah, there you see. There's no good deed goes unpunished.
Yep.
Sometimes.
Well, I just thought, because there's this thing of saying, when someone has died, committed suicide, oh, but I remember they gave us clues. How could I not see it?
Most of the people who are doing that are not the ones who are asking for help, actually. The ones who are attention
seeking. But how do you know?
Well, the ones who are going to commit suicide very often are the ones who don't tell anyone. They just do it.
Maybe they are also the ones who are going to say, I'm not ready to talk about it.
Maybe, dude. I don't know. How much do you care about these people?
Maybe some of them, 20%, 50%, 75%.
Well, just to keep your own life tidy, 50% or more, send them a message.
Also, yeah.
It costs you nothing.
And I think that message that you should send is a link to suicide prevention hotline.
Because, or ChatGPT.
Because as much as you want to help, you're not a professional.
Yeah.
Rather let a professional help.
Good point.
And I know about these suicide hotlines because of what I Googled. I was Googling
all
for...
All right, thank you so much.
Sorry?
Bye.
For now. He's had enough. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore. He's like, Jesus, like, can you guys just shut
bye.
Up?
Okay, thanks, bye.
I thought he called in for advice, but no, he just wanted to vent, just like the people on WhatsApp.
What if he commits suicide?
Nah, he'll be fine.
He got what he needed.
Yeah, got what he needed. He's done now. Monday is my officially my favorite show now. Whenever Leanne is on, I know it will be good. You guys are just tonic for the soul and a hug to the heart. Trevor's just the cherry on top today.
Aww. Thank you, Janet. All right, well, look at Janet's picture there, the profile. Mm. She looks so hot, but you know it's an old picture. It's like a real estate agent. They always look so great in the corner bin of the suburbs, and then they come as old, frumpy white lady. What happened to the well-tanned
blonde? Are you calling
blonde?
Me a real estate agent?
All right, listen, my friend. Nice to see you. And
this was amazing.
Thank you for popping by, and enjoy your gym. that you're going to. He's dressed to kill.
Already dressed. Yeah. You see how that works?
I really would have crawled back into bed because my only other job is taking the kids to school and back, and it's school holidays. So.
Nice.
That explains why the neighbor's kids are running in the garden, building things and screaming. Thank you for that.
Right. It's Trevor moved in next door. Oh, that's why he's actually on your neighborhood WhatsApp group. Yeah. The one that he brought
you
up.
You see the things Leanne posts.
Oh my God. Listen, can we just one day have a conversation about what is appropriate and inappropriate to put on these neighborhood groups? It's fine if you're sharing like the number of a plumber, but it's not fine for you to be putting up like jokes about shit on the neighborhood WhatsApp group.
Yeah. I think stay away from politics and religion.
Oh,
absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah.
And racism. And racism. Can we not have any
racism? Like,
isn't that politics? Doesn't that fall under politics?
I think it's a different category.
Different category. Yeah, I think granted, then.
Stick to the neighborhood stuff. Everything to do with just the neighborhood.
Security. Things that help you function.
Anyway.
Somebody's been taking the lilies from my sidewalk outside my gate.
That's acceptable.
Yeah.
But not to say, I think it's one of the blacks.
Well, there's a thing about the other WhatsApp group, the Hartley's one. They're blaming the Filipino lady for bringing in the, what's that floating thing?
Oh, the water hyacinth.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because she wanted to be reminded of her birthplace. And she brought these over. And
this a real thing?
Yes.
So awkward.
I know that the hyacinths are real for me. They're blaming a Filipino lady.
I think it's Filipino, but it's not, that plant is not native to South Africa.
But it's been there like 30 years.
Because this fucking old lady has planted it there. I've gone through 3 speedboats. This is awful.
Oh, it must be so hard. First world problems on the dam. Well, you said it, so we're going to believe it. All right, dude. Lovely to see you. Thanks for visiting us. Trevor Gumby, everybody. You can make sure that those shows are still available for people to hear. I don't know what he's talking about, that it's been archived or something. I mean, it is like 9 years, you know? We started that 9 years ago.
Wow. How old are we? Yeah.
I know. You're telling me. It's almost a decade. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Midlife crisis time.
Right. Trevor Gumby.
Thank you.
So good to see you. And people just love you. TL says, Trevor's the best guest this year so far. The man's hilarious. There we go. And Mapelo was. He was running out of airtime. That's why he had to cut the call. So
Thank goodness. Yeah.
We thought it was
at least he said thanks. He was like, okay, thanks. Bye.
Very good. Love it. Trev, be good, man. Check you later. No, he's not going to kill himself. What a nutcase. All right, my friend. Nice to see you. All right. It is just after 7:30. We've got Markets Mondays, which is one of the things I love to do every fortnight. We check in with somebody who actually knows what the hell's going on in the world economy. And of course, today we cannot but talk about some of the things that have been happening since Silicon Valley Bank started to cause its trouble. But whether you're a new trader looking for a safe place to start or an experienced trader who is looking for low spreads, multi-assets, and high tech, you will find markets.com suits you perfectly. As you know, we've got a special offer to everyone who listens to the show. You could follow the link on cliffcentral.com to register with markets.com. You will get a 30% bonus on your deposit. So go along to cliffcentral.com. You will see markets.com come up. Click on that. Follow through. 30% bonus in your deposit. It's not a bad way to start. And this week, we're joined by Finalto and Markets.com's chief market analyst, Neil Wilson, as we unpack the shaky banking conditions following SVB's collapse. Can we expect another financial crisis? What kind of policy moves will the Fed make next? And most importantly, how does it affect us? Neil, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, good morning. Nice to see you.
Morning. Yeah, it's not, it's, there's nothing that you could call usual about what we do on this show, but, one of the best things about having you guys from markets.com available is that you're here to help us understand and unpack what's happening in the world. So Trevor Gumby actually asked earlier, what happened with this Silicon Valley bank collapse? Cause it's something we're all a bit concerned about. It's the second largest bank failure in the United States' history. Obviously, it's very difficult to pinpoint any one thing when it comes to multi-billion dollar disasters. But what would you say was the biggest issue at SVB?
So SVB had kind of mismatched its portfolio. It sunk too much of its assets into what we call long duration bonds. So government bonds that mature in sort of 10, 20, 30 years. And what that meant was because the Fed had been raising interest rates, it was sitting on quite a chunky amount of unrealized losses. And that started to spook depositors. And we actually saw sort of really the first bank run of the digital age where, you know, a lot of these very flighty, very rate sensitive, very, you know, sort of knowledgeable depositors at SVB, who mainly tech companies. So companies that are in the know, if you like, not like, you know, the likes of you or I, who might not be that bothered if the savings rate was 3% instead of 3.5% or whatever. These are people who are sort of keeping an eye on this sort of stuff on a regular basis, and they started to pull their money out. And once you get a bank run and people start pulling their money out, well, there tends to only be one way it goes. And that's why we've seen Silicon Valley fail. And this morning I'm reading that they've actually, the Citizens Bank has actually bought the assets of SVB.
Oh. All right, so I mean, there's a follow-on thing that you kind of hinted at here, that SVB collapses, and then you've got First Republic Bank, Credit Suisse. There's one called Signature Bank. Is this a financial crisis? And do you think the next domino to fall will be something much bigger and much more international, or do you think they've managed to stem the flow of blood?
I'm not sure if they have stemmed it yet. We'll see. I mean, it seems to be that some of the weaker kind of players are kind of being taken out. I think we're in a situation of kind of fear that's driving this, and the market is kind of like a sort of hungry serpent or something that's kind of searching for its next victim, and it's just sniffing out where the weaker hands are. And I think that's why you saw Deutsche Bank coming under pressure at the end of the week, the big German bank, which has gone through years and years of pain and restructuring, much like Credit Suisse had done. You know, for many years we joked that Credit Suisse had become the new Deutsche Bank, and it was sort of gone to an extreme. And now the question is Deutsche Bank the new Credit Suisse? And, you know, they're sort of the weaker, kind of more troubled end of the banking spectrum in Europe. And I think, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that there's one or two more failures, but this is not 2008. They're not, the banks are not sitting on, you know, trillions of dollars of really, really bad assets, really sort of crappy sort of mortgages and so on. They're not in that position. So this is not going to spiral in that sense, but I think it could result in a kind of credit crunch whereby, you know, banks stop lending as much, and that can lead to, you know, real recession.
One of the questions that I have is that obviously, you know, the Biden administration climbed in and guaranteed that depositors would get their money back, but that does nothing for the investors in the bank. They are not guaranteed any kind of return on this. In other words, if you were an investor, you just have to suck it up. Is that right, Neil?
Yeah, basically. I mean, even on the deposit side, there's been some pretty mixed messages. We saw from Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, last week, said one thing on Wednesday and had a backtrack to pick on Thursday. Basically, once you're talking about deposit insurance, you're in a bad place, because really it's the sort of thing, it wants to be the kind of unseen hand that kind of steps in when, if there is a crisis, that there is some sort of intervention, some sort of control mechanism. But you don't really want to be talking about it overtly, because there's $17 trillion of deposits in the US. The government can't just bail them all out in reality. Yep. But in practice, it can step in as required. That's kind of the message that they're going to get to. But yeah, investors are you know, they're the ones that are, I guess, most exposed to this. And that's why you're seeing the share prices fall, because, you know, investors are you know, big intelligent sort of institutional investors are saying that we're just, you know, there's too much risk here. We, you know, the risk desk is kind of telling the portfolio managers what to do here. They're saying that there's too much risk here. We need to remove ourselves from this.
Well, I mean, part of the problem here at SVB, people aren't really talking about it as much, is that their risk person was not doing risk. They were buggering around with all kinds of other stuff and virtue signaling all over the place, because Silicon Valley is obviously one of those places where, you know, the more woke you are, the more respect you get. Certainly social currency seems to be high for that kind of thing. And the risk person, the person in charge of managing that risk at SVB, was messing around with other stuff.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, go walk and go broke. I think that's the message. I mean, they obviously had, you know, priorities were maybe not where they should have been. There's a bigger sort of issue there, if you like, across corporate culture, whereby there is a lot of focus on certain aspects that you think maybe are not fulfilling your fiduciary duty by worrying too much about, climate change or whatever it is. You know, the companies themselves, their responsibility is ultimately to their
shareholders.
Longer term, obviously, you know, there's lots of things in the long term that you might consider are important, but in the short term, you got to always be looking at where you are and what your risk is and what your, you know, as they found out, they shoved a whole lot of money into at the top of the market in government debt. And they decided that they, even when they were, when it was flagged to them, that they said, well, actually, we like the yield on this. We like the return. So we're going to keep it there, even though it created problems and ultimately the failure. So they're really, obviously showed a real lacking in risk management. Mm-hmm. That's an outlier. That shows that they're an outlier. That's not a sign that this is a deeper problem across the banking space. Because I think the vast majority of banks are not in that position at all. They're not like that. So, in a sense, it's a good thing, because it sort of shows that they are an exception rather than the rule.
All right. Well, let's turn our attention to something else. A lot of people who listen to this show were very, very gung ho about crypto for a long time, as was I. I think maybe that passion has subsided for many people, but we have seen a decoupling between crypto and the markets. Now, do you think this holds any long-term significance, or do you think it's just a knee-jerk reaction to uncertainty?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the Jamie Dimon kind of position, the pet rocks, you know. I'm not not to sound too dismissive, but, you know, I think they're an answer that's seeking a question, and I'm not quite sure what that question is. And I think definitely we've seen decoupling. Bitcoin's rallied significantly since the bank failure. That could be because people are searching for somewhere else to put their money. You know, people putting their money in money market funds to get sort of 4 or 5% returns and taking them out of banks. Maybe they're also putting them into Bitcoin. I'm not so sure. I think maybe it was just that you saw this big momentum trade through the start of the year. And really what the banking crisis has done is kind of lead to a big unwind of that position. So a reversal of that trade. And so the reversal of that trade was positive for Bitcoin and other, so some other cryptos anyway. I'm not sure. I don't think that this is the end of the financial system or anything like that. So I think that this is maybe a bit of an anomaly, this decoupling. I think fundamentally you're going to see the sort of mean reversion where, you know, crypto assets start to function as a kind of proxy for the amount of liquidity and risk appetite that there is in the market.
All right. Well, I was talking just the other day to your colleague at markets.com and someone who also comes and gives us some good advice, Simon Brown, the other day. And Simon said to me he is particularly worried about South Africa's Reserve Bank, and he reckons that they might just keep interest rates where they are. We're slightly ahead of the curve of the Fed in America when it comes to raising interest rates. And that's good, because we don't want to see a huge outflow of investment capital in South Africa just because our interest rates reach the same level as the US interest rates in terms of how low they are still. So, I mean, I wondered whether you thought that that was something to look at and what you think the Fed's behavior is going to be going forward, because obviously they only have this one tool to manage inflation, and inflation is the big, boogeyman that they have to try and take care of.
Yeah, so I think, well, as regards to the Fed, I think they kind of signaled last week that they're going to they're pretty much on pause now. They might raise once more, but they think that this banking crisis is going to lead to a significant amount of tightening in credit conditions. So they might lend, basically, the banks do. And that's sort of like, that's like several hikes. So they're going to sort of sit and wait and see what that pans out like. The question is, they don't really know what sort of, you know, impact, that market impact this has had on credit. So we'll see. And I think probably that this will lead to further tightening. And that does do some of the job for the Fed. Whether or not they then find out that actually they sort of pan, you know, if this sort of signature bank, Citizens Bank deal with SVB helps to alleviate concerns, and maybe, you know, some of the stress in the banking sector goes away. I don't see there's any one solution. I think that probably this is going to have to play out like a full cycle. It's going to have to lead to banks reining in credit. There's no other sort of solution here. There's not some magic wand where you say, well, their Credit Suisse is fixed, they're done. Right. It's going to lead to tightening in financial condition, and then possibly recession. I think you're looking at probably quite a hard landing in the US later this year.
All right. So for those people who are trading on markets.com now, they want to know about the Q1 earnings season. What do you think is going to happen there? I mean, I'm asking you to look into the crystal ball, but you have experience of this stuff. So you're a better person to answer this than me. And maybe there's some things that we should be aware of looking at these results.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's a sort of general sense that what sort of headwinds are earnings looking at? Is the consumer holding up? I think we're starting to see signs that consumers cracking, but there's still significant amount of, we're sort of talking about the US mainly, just because the US is the biggest market, and that's kind of what people trade on. There's still a lot of savings there that can be deployed, and they're going to be deployed as consumers spend. So I think there's potential for earnings again to hold up okay, but it's the outlook. I think we're going to be looking at what the CFOs are saying about demand going into sort of Q3, Q4, and I think that's going to be pretty weak. I think we're going to see some very weak guidance. So I think you're looking at earnings in lots of quarters, lots of sort of sections of the market holding up pretty surprisingly well, but then the guidance being very weak, and that's maybe going to rattle investors.
All right. Well, always good to check in with you, Neil, and thank you for your advice today and for clarifying things like SVB and the possible banking crisis. It's always good to hear these things from someone who knows what they're talking about. And we will catch up with you again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks a lot. Cheers.
Very, very good. There's Neil Wilson with markets.com. You can join markets.com today, get a 30% bonus. Just follow the link on cliffcentral.com. And if you've never tried any of this before, maybe it's time you dip your toe in. It's worth checking them out. Markets.com SA on all the social media. That's Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find all the information you need, and they're doing lots of cool and interesting things. We had a function here the other day with the guys from Markets, and they were talking to a whole bunch of traders, young and old, big traders, small traders. It's really an incredibly exciting place to be. And I think if you haven't tried it out before, this is maybe the time to give it a go. I noticed in the comments something funny happened here. Mm-hmm. Derek, who is a regular listener, had obviously left his phone because it said, "I love my girlfriend." Now, I was watching this unfold in the comment section. You don't think that's suspicious?
What?
The comment I've just put up here.
No, it is strange.
"I love my girlfriend." So I knew straight away that his girlfriend had got hold of his phone.
Oh, straight away.
Oh, yeah, no, straight away. And then he says a little bit later, "This is why you don't leave your phone unattended." And I knew when I saw the "I love my girlfriend" comment, I was like, definitely the girlfriend has the phone.
I didn't even click. Well done.
No, straight away. So you guys don't ever do things like that unless it's under huge pressure from the girlfriend.
Or it's their mate that's like playing the fool or whatever.
Might be, but it's probably the girlfriend.
Okay.
See, because a guy would never go into a comment section of a show, especially a show like this, and say,
"I thought it might have been in relation to something that someone else had said."
No, okay, no. And Hardy Dave says, "That's very admirable, Derek. You see, he was fooled by it. I was not fooled by this. I just want to point that out."
Okay. All right. Good.
I saw this and I knew what it was.
I wanted to say about SVB.
Yes.
I almost fully understand what happened in the background of it due to the video that I came across, which is an account held by this Barbie, Malibu Barbie type looking girl.
Yeah.
Who's married to a banker in Silicon Valley.
Oh, wow. And this is where you get your information.
Well, it was in my feed. So this is she's married to this Asian banker. They've moved to Silicon Valley.
Okay.
And she is making use of her time with her husband's knowledge and, experience to create videos of him explaining these things.
Oh, right. Okay.
As if he's explaining them to her. And I just thought, it was quite clever what she's done, because it's, you know, helping people who really don't understand anything from the ground up. But she's also, enriching herself.
Okay. But is she ditzy, or is she quite like?
She seems as if she could have been quite ditzy, but she's willing to grow, and she's starting to grow and have these conversations with her husband now and ask questions that make sense. So I thought that was quite cool. She's like,
that is cool,
developing herself, which is awesome.
And also because she comes at it from a point of view that isn't conventional, she might be able to explain things a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I like that. I like that very much. There are a couple of these education videos that you actually alerted me to a few Instagram accounts years ago that I now follow religiously. There are a couple of these. I mean, I'm following some really weird, like history stuff.
Oh, yeah.
For example, there's, you know, they'll post like a picture from 1853 and show you like, you know, children doing like hard labor work. And you think, wow, life is much better now than it's ever been. And then there'll be a photograph of, you know, the corpse of Lincoln on the day he was shot. And you'll think, I didn't even know they had photography then.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
I quite enjoy those videos that they bring back to life with color and.
Oh, those are the best.
Yeah. So it'll just be like a street scene in Manhattan or something of people walking and horse carriages. And they've brought it to color and given it definition.
I meant to bring this up when Trevor was still here, but we had to go to markets and there was a whole lot of stuff happening. But I watched a clip from what was supposed a stand-up comedy show in the 1940s or 50s. Mm-hmm. So it's all in black and white. And this guy goes up on stage and goes, "Hey, everybody, are you having a happy time?" And then he like calls up these people from the crowd, and then he gives them a prize, but then there's some funny stuff. They tell stories. And it shows you how much humor has changed. Like if you tried to do that stuff now, you'd be booed off the stage.
Mm.
But in those days, the audience were loving it. They're rolling in their seats. They're clapping. They're laughing out loud. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious how in just, 70 years or so?
Yeah.
Everything has changed, even in humor. You think, well, we probably have the same sense of humor as the people who lived 70 years ago. We don't. No. We have nothing in common with them in terms of that stuff.
We've become so much more demanding in the level of humor that we require.
I mean, here's a good point. Slippery Pickle says, and it's in that movie, Ways to Die in the West or whatever, Charlize Theron made with Seth, whatever his name is.
Rogan, perhaps.
No, the other one.
Oh, yes.
The guy who does Family Guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. Makes the point that they never used to smile in photos back in those days.
No.
That's the funniest thing,
wasn't it a
dumb
thing? No, I think it's the opposite now. I think we're the funny ones.
Because we smile?
Yeah. We force a smile. That's more odd.
You can look happy in a picture. Shouldn't that be how you – do you want pictures of you looking glum?
I just think it's odd that when a phone or some kind of camera device is put in front of our face, we smile like chimps.
I think it's much weirder to be all serious for a picture.
It is funny because they may have been laughing before, and the photographer said, "No, stop laughing." I don't know how they would have done that.
Yeah, Seth MacFarlane. There we go. A Million Ways to Die in the West. Probably one of the funniest movies of all time.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Really brilliant.
Take your hat off, boy. That's a dollar bill. That's exactly right. Okay. Well, I think it's ridiculous that we smile for pictures, but I still think it's even more ridiculous if you didn't, if you on purpose tried to be all serious.
It was interesting as well, speaking about our little debate last week on fat shaming.
Yeah. Did you get some feedback on that?
I didn't actually know. But something that
I don't think we were very controversial about it, actually.
No, because you're not extreme in it, and I'm not extreme in it.
No,
on either.
Although
end.
Some people think I am, because I will laugh at fat people, and I do make comments about it. And some people go, "Well, that's
yeah," but you're less a bridge too far. Extreme than you were. You know,
Okay, but I interrupted you. What did you want to say about it?
Oh, yes. Talking, merging.
She had a senior moment.
Merging that with our talk about history and fat shaming with that is there was a video about women's clothing. And you know, these Victorian era corsets and dresses and things.
Yeah, these poor women.
And
things
they were all
so
tiny. Like if you go through a museum, you see these tiny little, and you think people were tiny in those days. Well, as it turns out, it's not. I was watching this historian who has corsets for big women too.
All right.
It's just that the museums asked for the smallest one that would fit their mannequins.
Oh.
Because they didn't go in order in 40 sizes.
Listen, there must have been, there's no way everyone was tiny in those days. I mean, they also say things like, oh, well, you know, we've got a bit taller on average. That's possibly true. But there were 6'3" people in biblical times.
But that's also why I don't understand. I mean, I even lived in a town where there were these historical homes built by the British colonizers, and the doorways were smaller. But I think people were just ducking. It was too expensive to build taller buildings.
I don't know about that. I don't think anyone wants to duck when they go through a door, do they?
Well, they have since the cave ages, haven't they?
But one of the things that's nice about walking into a room is that you don't have to duck. Why would you?
I've never had.
Why'd you
to worry
spend money on floors or on ceilings or on art in your house if you didn't spend enough money just to make the doors?
Well,
big
think
enough.
About the window thing. It was too expensive to build windows.
That sounds like nonsense. it is interesting considering that we were on last Monday as well, and you know it was a public holiday the next day and it was the weekend before. So I don't know if a lot of people were there, but we did talk about that menopause stuff, which got people talking. In other circles. And Cliff Centralist says you had a menopause moment now when you had to think of what
perimenopause, if you want to be specific. But I must say that was another kind of not argument that we put forward, but it was I didn't feel like her case might have been strong enough. Remember I said, you know, what is the ask of men? And I thought about it for a long time afterwards because I'm not like a severely symptomatic perimenopausal woman. I just get on with my life. So I don't know. What do they want men to do?
Like, there's this thing going on in the world at the moment, which on a day where I'm very prickly and irritable, it just makes me crazy. But otherwise, I'm okay with it. It's this idea of everyone has to be listening to everyone else's lived experience nonsense. And that's all good and well. Like I say, on a good day, if I've got time and I'm feeling thoughtful and kind, then of course I'll sit and listen to your lived experience thing and go, oh, that's unbelievable or how terrible or how great or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I'll have a genuine interest. But this idea that we're all just sitting around with oodles of time to listen to everyone else's bullshit lived experience, please believe me, there's someone with a more interesting story than you.
No, exactly.
And to have to hear this at the workplace where there's actually stuff to be done, I think you're asking a lot of people. You know, everybody's got their shit. Your shit might be that you're going through menopause. The guy might be going through a divorce. Which one is more important? Who deserves more time? What are we suddenly going to allocate? We're going to walk around with a victim number on our shirts and
yellow for divorce.
You've got a like 70% misery index today. Let me talk to you about your lived experience. Who has the time? I just don't believe people are that interested in other people for starters. They're only interested if they can get something or if they really care about that person.
Yeah. It's like survival and care.
At work, nobody cares. I saw a really interesting interview with, Annie Leibovitz. Fran Leibovitz is the writer. Annie's the photographer. Fran Leibovitz, it's really like she's a grumpy old lady, but she's fantastic, right? And super smart. She's been on Real Time with Bill Maher a few times. That's where I first saw her. She said she doesn't believe any of this crap about companies caring about their workers. She said she can't believe anyone fell for that. The only job of a business is to make profits. She said all this other stuff is just lip service. She said they've borrowed the language of poets, your vision, your values, all of this. She said that's absolute nonsense. And if you believe it, if you fall for that stuff, you're just an idiot. That was Fran Lebowitz.
Jeez.
And then I saw a clip of Ayn Rand, you know, the great writer of the 1950s, who escaped Soviet Russia. And she was the mother of, like, she wrote Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead and all that stuff. She says she believed, and well, this is, she's no longer around, but in this clip, she says, I believe in a separation of the state and economics. Just like the separation of church and state, she's, it produces a much more harmonious environment. She says that the state should have no control of the economy whatsoever. And then everything will be better. And it got me thinking again, is it the business of a corporation or a small enterprise to be worrying about, you know, perimenopausal women, people who are going through divorces, give them free counseling at work? Not really. These things are all distractions from the purpose. You're there to work to produce a profit. So you can
These are your sick days. Use them how you, you need to.
I mean, you could take a hard line on this or you can accommodate these things, but it's never going to be 100% either way.
No, no, I agree with you.
So I'm glad we settled that.
Yes.
Very important.
Yeah, it was
right,
like,
let me just tick that off my list for the morning. Done. All right, everybody. Have a happy week. We will see you tomorrow, 6 a.m. bright and early for another one of these. Lebang and I return, and we've got some interesting people coming up this week. I've done a couple of really cool interviews, which I can't wait to play for you. All of those and more on the way. And by the way, just so you know, there's also something very cool coming up now. Sitting at the helm of TBWA Hunter Scaris Johannesburg are the CEO Karabo Denalane and the executive creative director Carl Willoughby. Karabo and Carl shared their most recent experiences in the storied tale of this business. Karabo's tenure has included the monumental transformation of the agency into what it is today, which is a truly radical, open, creative collective with culture at the core. While Carl has been acknowledged at all major local and international awards shows in 2021, they were ranked the number one agency in South Africa. They still hold that place now, according to the local awards. So take a listen to all of this. It's part of our 40 years of Hunter Scaris. And of course, this week they celebrate that with a big party. And it's something worth celebrating, very much deserved. So take a listen to that. That's coming up next. CliffCentral.com.